All right, try that. I think we're there now. Yes? Okay. Good morning, church. It's good to see John here today. I know he's sick this week, and so he asked me to speak for him today, and we're going to stick with the story. And the story, chapter 13, and we're going to be talking about the king who had it all. The story of Solomon is a really interesting story for me. Because if you really read the scripture, if you just go through the story of God there, you can see that Solomon really wasn't supposed to be king as far as normal takeovers go, right? When the king dies, which one? The firstborn, the chosen one, as we call my oldest brother, right? Right? You get that? And so you have that, the oldest son is supposed to take over, but he wasn't the oldest. And so Bathsheba went to David and said, I got an idea. How about making Solomon king? And David's like, sure. And so he brings in Solomon, David does, and he like gives him some advice, some kingly advice, that if he had taken this advice, the story would have turned out a little bit differently. But here's the advice he gives. He says, I'm about to go the way of all the earth. 1 Kings chapter 2. He said, so be strong. Act like a man. Now, there's a reason he said act like a man, because Solomon is a little boy. He's not very old, okay? And so he's young, and he's like, how are they going to respect me as king? And he's like, first you need to do is act like a man. I remember my dad took me to visit one of my teachers in sixth grade. Now, in sixth grade, I started growing taller, okay? So I looked a little older, and the intensive care unit said, nobody under a certain age. And my dad looked at me, and he said, we're about to go in here. You're too young to go into the ICU, but you look older. And he said, and if you act older, you can get away with it. He said, the key to life, son, and I love this, he said, is to act like you know what you're doing and no one will ask you any questions. So I was like, man, that's been good advice all my life. But he's here saying, you need to act like a man. You need to act like a man and observe what the Lord, your God, requires. Walk in obedience to him and keep his decrees and commands, his laws and regulations as written in the law of Moses. Do this so that you may prosper in all you do and wherever you go, and that the Lord may keep his promise to me. If your descendants watch how they live, and they walk faithfully before me, watch this, with all their heart and soul, you will never fail to have a successor on the throne of Israel. With all your heart. How many of y'all have, and you don't have to raise your hand, no nudging or pointing this morning, but how many of you guys have that one room or that one closet that you don't include on the tour of your home? Right? I'd like to show you our house. We're not going to go past the living room, right? I mean, so most of us, like, have a seat right here. Do you want anything? The kitchen's not really clean. I'm going to get, we have that closet where we just push everything into that closet, and we hope no one ever opens that door. Or we have mama's sewing room. It's what it's called. No one's ever sewn in there for 25 years, but it's called the sewing room or whatever. You have that room or that closet or that garage. And we're not willing to take care of every aspect. Maybe some of you are really organized, every closet. I've been to people's houses where if you open up their closet door, everything's in a tote and it's labeled. Those people make me sick. But anyway, those people are incredible, right? Those people, I'm just kidding, it's awesome. And I respect that. I think that's awesome. And I just worry that I'm going to mess something up, you know. But imagine you have something to hide, and David's telling his son, listen, worship God with everything. Don't hold anything back. Don't hide anything. One of the funniest videos that I saw, and I found it, I want to share it with you, is when a person had a friend coming over, and they decided to set them up. And I could tell you what's going to happen, but it will ruin it, so I'll give you commentary right after this. Some of y'all can guess. This is the worst prank ever, by the way. Just leave. No.
Some marbles fell everywhere.
Did you open my medicine cabinet?
Yeah, I just took a look, you know?
I love this because it's like there's this hidden thing and he opens it. I mean, you don't have to raise your hand because you've been to other people's houses, but it's tempting to be like, I don't know. It's just like this habit. What's on behind the mirror? And he found out. It's embarrassment right behind the mirror, right, for him. And so it's like we have that spot in our life. We're saying, you know, I just want to hide this. And David tells his son, don't hide anything from God. Give God your whole heart and your soul, every ounce of you. And so Solomon becomes king, and the Lord visits him. And he's this young boy, and God says to him, he says, like, I'll give you anything you want. Man, that's incredible, right? Like, here is, you know, we've always wanted those three wishes, right? We've seen movies, we've read books, you know, the Aladdin's lamp, you know, your lantern, you rub the lamp, or like this Geico commercial.
15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Everybody knows that.
Well, did you know genies can be really literal?
No.
What is your wish?
No. Okay. $1,000,000.
Oh, no. Geico, 15 minutes.
So he said, I want $1,000,000, and he got them. All right, so that's the literal genie. But God comes to Solomon, and he says, I'll give you anything you want. And Solomon's answer is this. Look, I'm just a boy. I'm going to need wisdom. This is judicial wisdom he's asking for. He's like, people are going to come to me and ask me all kinds of things, and they're going to want my opinion. I need wisdom. And then what God says is, great answer. Now I'm going to give you everything. Which is crazy, because you've never said to your parents, like, growing up, did you ever say, they said, what do you want for your birthday? I'll just have dinner with my parents. Oh, that's awesome. I'll give you a car, too. You know, that never happened, right? So he says, I want wisdom. And God says, wonderful. You get it, but I'm also going to give you everything else. And so Solomon becomes king. And so right away, people are going to test him, right? Things are going to happen right away, right out of the box. Is he wise? And so we get this story. Now two prostitutes came to him, to the king, and stood before him. And one of them said, pardon me, Lord, my lord. This woman and I live in the same house, and I had a baby while she was there with me. The third day after my child was born, this woman also had a baby. We were alone. There was no one in the house but us, the two of us. And during the night, this woman's son died because she laid on him. So she got up in the middle of the night and took my son from my side while I, your servant, was asleep. She put him under her breast and put her dead son on by mine. And the next morning I got up to nurse my son, and he was dead. But when I looked at him closely in the morning, I saw it wasn't the son that I had born. The other woman said, no, the living one is my son. The dead one is yours. But the first one insisted, no, the dead one is yours and the living one is mine. And so they argued before the king, and the king said, this one says my son is alive and your son is dead, while the other one says, no, your son is dead and mine is alive. Then the king said, bring me a sword. So they brought a sword for the king, and he gave an order, cut the living child in two, and give half to one and half to the other. That sounds crazy, doesn't it? Except if you back up and realize that the Lord had given him special wisdom to handle these kind of things, that this young boy would not have. You know, he's like asking this child to be cut in half. The woman whose son was alive was deeply moved out of love for her son, and said to the king, please, my lord, give her the living baby. Don't kill him. But the other said, neither I nor you shall have him. Cut him in two. And the king gave his ruling. Give the living baby to the first woman. Do not kill him. She is his mother. What an incredible little story. When all of Israel heard the verdict that the king had given, they held the king in awe because they saw that he had wisdom from God to administer justice. Now, this is so important to the story of Solomon, because when we read Solomon's story, he doesn't always make the right decisions for himself, does he? But he seems to make the right decision for everyone else, because there was a certain kind of wisdom that he asked for. He asked for judicial wisdom. He wanted to be able to rule well. He didn't say, "Lord, help me never make a mistake." He said, "Lord, help me judge wisely." And God gave him that power and that ability. And so Solomon was so wise in those kind of matters that he started writing things down, right? And he made this giant collection of wise sayings, part of the only Bible, only part of the Bible where you can take one verse and hang it on the wall and it can stand by itself. The book of Proverbs. Great wise things. So what happens in Solomon's life? Here's what happens. Not only is he wise, he becomes ridiculously wealthy. Look at let's go back to 1 Kings chapter 10, and I want to show you how wealthy he was. The weight of the gold that Solomon received yearly, now you can get sidetracked by the number, but we're not paying attention to that number there, but 666 talents of gold every year. So I did a little bit of math. I got online and I said, what's gold worth today? And in today's market, this is $101,568,000 in gold every year given to him by the kings of the world. Every year. That's a lot of gold. Then he says, not including the revenues from the merchants and traders from all over the Arabian kings and the governors of the territories. That's not even including all these other things, the taxes and whatnot. And King Solomon made 200 large shields of hammered gold. Because what are you going to do with all that gold? You're going to put it in piles? No, I'm going to make shields out of it. Now watch this. The shield, 600 shekels of gold went into each shield. All right. So every large shield hanging on the wall of the palace cost $152,352 each. And there were 600 of them. There was 200 of them, excuse me. And that totaled $30,470,400 in shields hanging on the wall. Okay. He also made 300 small shields of hammered gold, with three minas of gold in each shield. So each shield that's small is $79,223 worth of gold in each one of those. And with that 300, that's $23,766,912 worth of small shields. Hanging on the wall, that's art. It's not like go to war gold, this is art. That's his palace. This is his riches. Look at all the things the king put them in the palace of the forest of Lebanon. The king made a great throne covered with ivory and overlaid with fine gold. And the throne had six steps, and on the back it was rounded top. And on both sides of the seat were armrests with a lion standing beside each of them. The 12 lions stood in the six steps, and one on the other end of each step. Nothing like it had ever been made for any other kingdom. The king, all King Solomon's goblets were gold. And all of the household articles in the palace of the forest of Lebanon were pure gold. Nothing was made of silver because silver was considered of little value in Solomon's days. The king had a fleet of trading ships at sea along with the ships of Hiram. And once every 3 years it returned carrying gold, silver, and ivory and apes and baboons. Why not just have a zoo going on too, right? King Solomon was greater in riches and wisdom than all the other kings on the earth. The whole world sought an audience with Solomon to hear the wisdom God had put in his heart. Year after year, everyone who came and brought a gift, articles of silver and gold and robes and weapons and spices and horses and mules. Solomon accumulated chariots and horses, and he had 1,400 chariots and 12,000 horses, which he kept in the chariot cities and also with him in Jerusalem. The king made silver, watch this, as common in Jerusalem as stones. Silver was the same price as gravel. Y'all take 2 scoops of silver. I want to put in a new driveway. That's how wealthy he was. And cedar as plentiful as sycamore fig trees in the foothills. When you enter the land of the Lord your God is giving you, and this is what Deuteronomy says. Now, watch this. You're hearing all that, right? You're hearing about all this wealth. We haven't even got to the wives yet. When you enter the land the Lord your God is giving you and have taken possession of it and settled it, and you say, this is way back in Deuteronomy. If you're watching the story, if you're reading your storybook, you're finding out where we are, right? You're finding out in this story where we are, because in Judges, they're like, we need a king because everybody else has a king. Samuel is like, we need a king because everybody else needs a king. And God told them way back in Moses' day, he's like, when you get to the promised land, you're going to say, let us set a king over us like all the other nations around us. Be sure to appoint over you a king the Lord your God chooses. He must be from among your fellow Israelites. Do not place a foreigner over you, one who is not an Israelite. The king, moreover, must not acquire great numbers of horses for himself. 10,000 horses? Is that a great number? I'm not sure. Yes, it is, right? Or make the people return to Egypt to get more of them. That's what he's doing. For the Lord has told you, you are not to go back that way again. He must not take many wives. All right, just a second. Let's see what happens there, right? Okay, in chapter 11, we're going to get there in just a moment. 1 Kings, it says this. But King Solomon, however, loved many foreign women. Besides Pharaoh's daughter, Moabites, Ammonites, Edomites, Sidonians, and the Hittites, they were from nations about with the Lord had told the Israelites, you must not intermarry with them because they will surely turn your hearts after their gods. This had nothing to do with race. This had everything to do with the God that they were serving. And he said, you aren't going to marry anybody who doesn't believe in God. And I'm going to tell you right now, if you're single, you shouldn't marry anybody who doesn't believe in Jesus. And there'll be people in even among us and people that we know, they will testify to that. Say, I did it a different way. Trust me, you should marry somebody who believes in Jesus. He says, nevertheless, again, but Solomon held fast to them in love. But Lord, I love them. Wife number 457 or 263, whatever it is. What does it say he had? He had 700 wives. Wait. Must not make, take many. 700's a lot. Then it says he had 300 concubines. So let's just put all the math together. That's 1,000 mother-in-laws. Men, you know what I'm talking about? That is 1,000 mother-in-laws. That's a lot of mother-in-laws, right? But here's what happened. Verse 5, it says, he followed the Ashereth, the goddess of the Sidonians, and Molech, the detestable god of the Ammonites. Now, if you're going to follow Molech, one of the things that he desires is a child sacrifice. He must not accumulate large amounts of silver and gold. When he takes the throne of his king, he is to write for himself on a scroll a copy of this law, taken from that of the Levitical priest. It is to be with him, and he is to read it it all the days of his life so that he may learn to revere the Lord his God and follow carefully all the words of his law and these decrees and not consider himself better than his fellow Israelites and turn from the law to the right or to the left, then he and his descendants will reign a long time over his kingdom, Israel. But he didn't listen to the law. He listened to the money that was rolling in and the wives. And so he starts out his king reigning as a king, saving a child, and then you see right here, evidenced by the story of Molech, is that he had to kill a child. All because he didn't listen to the simple decree of his father who said, follow God with all your heart and soul. Do all of his commands. So you may say to yourself, wait, Hoss. See, polygamy is normal. God was okay with that. I'm going to tell you today that he was not. You know, in the very beginning, Genesis chapter 2 and verse 24, that is why a man leaves his father and mother. Okay, so a man, singular. You following me now? Leaves his father and mother and is united to his wife, singular, and they become one flesh. God's design from the very beginning. Jesus repeats this in the New Testament. Here is my design, one man, one woman for life. Amen? But the world messes that up. And when we don't do this, then we have trouble. Suddenly, the God of the Amalekites looks good. The God of the flesh looks good. We leave God's way, and it leads to destruction. If we live God's way, it leads to life. Amen? Let me give you some statistics, okay? Since 1970, there's been a 700% increase in cohabitation in the United States. 700% increase since 1970. Today, there are 9.7 million Americans living with an unmarried different sex partner. 9.7 million. Proverbs says, there's a way that appears to be right, but at the end leads to death. And let me explain this. There is a relationship that seems right, but in the end it leads to divorce. Because let me explain. A University of Wisconsin poll came out and said that 75% of people who cohabitate, who get married, it ends in divorce. Did you hear that? 75%. Here's another startling statistic. Only 15 couples out of 100 who cohabitate get married. And of those 15 couples, only 4 can make it through. There's a way that seems right to a man, but in the end, it ends in divorce. Is that clear? Now, you'd be like, oh, Hoss is meddling. Hoss is picking on people. It's not my words. I don't stand before you saying, Hoss says. I'm going to say it like this. And this is what the word of the Lord says. It is to be one man and one woman for life. And see, it's kind of like this. If there was a roller coaster and it was called the death coaster, and every time at the end of the ride it would fall off the tracks and everybody dies, people would still ride it. You know why? Because we have this in our mind, we can say to ourselves, oh, but I'm going to be the one who makes it. You can watch the destruction happen all around you. You can watch everybody failing, but you're going to say, no, it's my turn. I'm going to do it. I'm going to be that one. And yet every time the death coaster ends in the same spot, right? It falls off the tracks and everyone dies. And then you say, but Lord, listen, and I want to tell you this, and so you can understand where this comes from. The 700% increase in cohabitation came from people saying to themselves, with I think a good motive, almost, that is this, okay? Man, 50% of all marriages end in divorce. So why would I want to commit to something unless I could figure out if this is the right relationship? Does that make sense? That's what people are saying. They don't understand that they're getting on the death coaster or the divorce coaster. They think they're saving the world with more divorce and problems. Like, we're going to try this out. We're going to give this a run. If it works, we're going to get married. It's not the way to go. But we understand what's happening is that people look, and here they do the same thing in church. They look at church and they say, okay, the statistics for divorce aren't better in church. Did y'all know that? I'd love to stand up here and say, you know, in somewhere around 50%, 40-some percent of all marriages end in divorce. And in the church, oh, only 4% end in divorce. I'd love to be able to say that. But it's simply not true. And so the world looks at us and say, "What do you have the answers?" They open our medicine cabinet and all the marbles fall out, right? They see behind what's going on. And so Solomon's life for us to look at is this. Listen to what God has to say. Because Solomon, this didn't please him. None of this pleased, none of this made, if you read Ecclesiastes, you know that all of the money, all of the gold, all of the silver that was so common, all of the wives, all the concubines, everything that he amassed, all of those horses and chariots and palaces and the everything, he said, he called it all meaningless. He said it was like chasing after the wind. It's like when you're a little kid, that little dirt devil thing that goes, you know what I'm talking about? When the leaves pick up and you want to anything. It might pick you up and throw you around, right? This is Texas. In Kentucky, they weren't strong enough, but down here, man. But you see, the point is that it's like chasing after the wind. He said, that whole life that I lived that maybe some people envy. You look, watch television. When I was a kid, it was the Tonight Show, Lifestyles, the Rich and Famous, National Anthem. Remember that? And then, that was television. So Lifestyles of Rich and Famous was the last thing that I saw because I've always had a hard time going to sleep at night, but I've always watched that. And you see all these extravagant homes. You go, that's going to make me happy. You see, nothing is going to make you happy except for the one who created you. He's what you've been looking for all along. See, the world looks at us and says, okay, you got all these rules and all these things you can't do, and there's these lists that you can't do, and he's saying, listen, that doesn't look appealing. But I'm telling you right now, as if you take the road that God has called you, it is a more pleasing road than the world has to offer. We live in a world where same-sex attraction is being glorified on almost every television show. Every newscast. There are people that would call me names for just mentioning that. I'm telling you right now, I'm not afraid of anything except spiders. So arachnophobe, absolutely. All these other things that they're saying, no way. Because I love people regardless of their choices. I don't agree with them. Some of my own family are struggling with same-sex attraction, and I love them. But they don't ever hear me say, whatever makes you happy. Because everybody that I've sat down with dealing with those things have said to me the same thing. I'm not happy. I may not want that, but this isn't making me happy either. God's way is the right way. At the very end of Ecclesiastes, I want to tell you this. Even though Solomon kind of drifted off with these wives and started worshiping these other gods, I believe personally that he came back to the Lord. And at the very end of Ecclesiastes, he says, all right, here's everything. Here's a bullet down to just as simple as I can get. Fear God and keep his commandments. That's it. That's everything. Right? That's his father's speech to him. I was telling y'all Wednesday night, my dad had all kinds of sayings growing up. And one of them is, don't buy a car in the dark, in the rain, or in a hurry. Oh man, it was like his little thing. And I bought one in all three situations. Did not work out. It didn't. I didn't listen to dad. David says to Solomon, follow every bit of God's advice. What did he do? He had grand wisdom to tell you how to live. Zero wisdom applied to himself. And we do the same thing, don't we? Tell our kids, oh, no, no, you don't live like me. They're going to live like you. Oh, I'm going to take my kid and drop him off and to the church, and he's going to go to, he or she's going to go to Bible class and learn a whole bunch, but I'm going to go ahead and go home and catch up on news and all these other things. What's your child going to do when they graduate? They're not going anywhere. We have got to be the ones who tell our children, this is how we ought to live. We've got to be the ones who live right. God's way is the right way. Jesus wanted to save us, and he had pain in front of him, right? Awful pain. But he did it. And that brought him joy. And Paul says, make my joy complete by being like-minded, right? Having the same spirit as Christ, the same mind as Christ. Philippians 2. We got to be that. So this morning, if you're struggling anyway, our elder is going to be at one of the different corners here to pray with you. If you, if you're not a Christian, let me tell you, God's way is awesome. There's nothing like laying your head on your pillow at night knowing you're saved. Right? Amen? Like a couple nights ago, I knew that this is Memorial Day weekend and just going to speak. And I had this dream. And John, you probably had one of these dreams too. And I start the sermon and people start walking out. And I'm not even to point one, and there's only two people in the room, and I'm like, I better stop, and they're like, no, you got to keep going. I was like, but nobody's here, and I wake up going, wow, that's a weird dream, or I have another dream where I'm like unprepared, and I'm like, you know, and I'm dreaming that I can't find my notes, and I don't know, you know, I mean, I do that for Bible class on Wednesday night, you know, thinking about and worrying and panicking. If I wasn't right with God, I would have the same kind of nightmare life. And you don't want that. Solomon got right with God, I believe. And he went way off the beaten path. And so God's calling you back. Take the wisdom that you tell everybody else and apply it to your life. If you're not a Christian, become one today. If you are one and you just need prayers, we have our elders that'll be here to pray for you. But if you're subject to that call from God, come now together, we stand and we sing this song.